Support for The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Twenty years ago, New Hampshire celebrated its first Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the last in the nation to do so. The day had been a federal holiday since 1983, when it received a bipartisan vote in Congress and President Ronald Reagan's signature. But getting states to adopt their own King Days was another story. Some moved right away, others took longer, and New Hampshire took the longest. Our legislature passed a King Day bill in the spring of 1999, with Governor Jean Shaheen signing it into law on June 7th, a moment, she said, that was in keeping with New Hampshire's great tradition of fighting for justice.
Then across the State House Plaza is a statue of John Hale from Rochester, who was the first anti-slavery U.S. senator. The Republican Party, the party of abolition, was founded here. Adding Martin Luther King Jr.'s name to Civil Rights Day is a fitting tribute both to our history as a state and to Dr. Martin Luther King.
Today in The Exchange, we reflect on this history and what the King holiday means now. And of course, let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests. Clifton Belo is with us in studio. He served in the State House and then Senate from the early 90s to 2004. He was involved in the effort to establish a Martin Luther King holiday. And Cliff Belo, really nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And also with us, Sudie Lett, Youth and Education Coordinator for the Granite State Organizing Project. He's also head basketball coach at Manchester Central High School. And Sudie, it's really good to meet you. Thank you also for coming in.
Thank you. Good morning.
And also joining us from New York is Jackie Weatherspoon, former New Hampshire State Representative who twice co-sponsored bills to establish New Hampshire's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Weatherspoon is co-chair of the State Democratic Party's African American Caucus. Today, she divides her time between teaching middle school in Harlem and her duties in the Granite State. And several of Jackie Weatherspoon's students are listening in today. So welcome to them. And Jackie Weatherspoon, welcome back to you, too. Thank you for your time.
It's so good to be with everyone.
So, Jackie, in the speeches from 20 years ago on that signing day, many people said, we didn't think it would take New Hampshire this long to join the rest of the country. Why did it take New Hampshire so long?
Well, we are a very cautious state. There were a number of people that wanted to tread slowly. And in some instances, they wanted the state to be called Civil Rights Day to celebrate so many other people that had worked on in making issues of justice known around the state.
Civil Rights Day, that was one of the arguments to honor other people who'd been involved, including Jonathan Daniel of Keene. Isn't that right, Jackie?
Absolutely, who had gone south to work on issues of voter registration for the Episcopal Church.
Why do you think it took so long, Cliff?
Well, part of it was there was a compromise in 1991 to create Civil Rights Day. I think in 89, the effort to add Martin Luther King's name to the as a holiday actually failed by 262 to 91 votes. And I think part of the context for that, we had the compromise. And so for a number of years, the legislators said in the House, the Senate kept passing the bill, that we had a compromise. We shouldn't revisit
the compromise again being Civil Rights Day.
Right. And part of the opposition, I think, comes from the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. in 1967, the year before he was assassinated, became a vocal, outspoken critic of the Vietnam War. And that was at the height of the war. And as the anti-war movement was growing, he was criticized by, I think, 168 editorials for trying to join the peace movement and the civil rights movement, including the New York Times and the Washington Post, highly critical. So that, there was still that lingering resentment from veterans that this was somehow inappropriate.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so, Sudie Lett, you were 14 years old, so I won't ask you too much about what you remember about that actual day. But you moved here from Chicago when you were 14. What did you think when you heard, upon arriving here in the Granite State, that we had Civil Rights Day but not Martin Luther King Day?
Well, coming from the south side of Chicago to a completely new environment in New Hampshire, a lot of things were different. So having it where they didn't celebrate Martin Luther King's holiday like everyone else kind of just went into the bag of so many other things that were different.
Well, like what, Sudi?
Well, I mean, the demographic is largely different. South side of Chicago is predominantly African-American. New Hampshire is predominantly like European, white, Caucasian. So that change was really interesting. And then one other change is when I first got to New Hampshire, it's a really clean, clean place. So, I mean, just so many different changes, so many different things. And learning that they had Civil Rights Day is what I remembered. Kind of went into that bag of just a different state. They do things differently here.
So your parents, your father, Willard Lett, and your mother, Brenda Lett, both very active in the NAACP here in the Granite State. Your father was head of the organization for a time. Do you remember anything, Sudi, as a teenager, about some of the discussions in your house around this?
Yeah, I mean, we only have an hour show, but many discussions around it, around the thought process behind keeping it Civil Rights Day, the thought process behind pushing for MLK Day, and some of the organizing strategies that went into bringing it to fruition.
Why was it so important to your family, Sudi, that the name be changed from Civil Rights Day to Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Well, I think it was just an acknowledgement of a man who was a great American. He's an American hero. And I think that it was a level of respect that needed to be paid to him for the amount of work that he did to help everyone.
Jackie, back when this was being debated, and I'm dating myself because I remember, I was hosting this show at the time, supporters of a Martin Luther King Day were often asked, and you were among them, why do you need to have King's name attached to the day? Why isn't Civil Rights Day enough? How did you answer that question back then, Jackie?
Well, part of it is for our kids to have their heroes, their sheroes, and those leaders that had laid their lives on the line for justice. And as his face was that beacon whereby students would be marching for poor people's rights for housing, for better education. So he symbolized the articulation of everything that needed to be changed in America. And when we had a number of marches during that time around the country for so many years, he was that symbol that was chosen by a number of organizations throughout the South, even the garbage man strike, even the bus strike, the Alabama, Birmingham bus strike. He was that symbol. So his face grabbed up all of those issues. Like a Rosa Parks as a symbol of moving issues around social justice for Black people and other people forward.
You know, Sudi mentioned, Jackie, how everything was different when he moved here from the south side of Chicago to New Hampshire. What was New Hampshire like in the mid to late 1990s as this movement was really catching fire? What were some of the other sort of social issues of the day that were being debated at that time, along with this Martin Luther King Jr. Day debate?
Well, let me just give you a couple of the flashpoints, and Cliff will agree with me. The KKK was socially active at that point, and a number of listeners from the Seacoast will remember that they were actually staging in full regalia on the main street in Exeter, New Hampshire. Also, we were around the civil rights issues around women, around Beijing, women and equality, women and equal pay. So as I spoke with Ellen, it's a confluence of so many things that were happening. And in fact, we were also, along with GGE, discussing kindergarten, healthcare. So it was a confluence of issues. And I felt around New Hampshire, people wanted to get on board. People wanted to be included in what was going on in the rest of America at the time.
Well, and you mentioned Jeanne Shaheen, who was governor when this bill was signed. And we're going to talk with now U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen a little bit later. But just picking up on what Jackie said, Cliff, what were the repercussions for New Hampshire in the late 90s for holding out on this? Because as I remember at the time, this lack of a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was starting to turn to bad PR for the state.
I vaguely recall that. There certainly were other states in the South where there had been some boycotts, or Arizona enacted it and repealed it. And
I remember that,
They reenacted it to get the Super Bowl, I think, to Arizona. There was concern that there could be similar repercussions in New Hampshire.
I remember, and Cliff or Jackie, correct me if I'm wrong, that some white supremacists came to New Hampshire, just a few, came to the State House to sort of say, good job, New Hampshire.
Right, right.
That didn't make New Hampshire look very good. Go ahead, Jackie. What do you remember?
Well, there were a number of groups, and they still come, and they're trying to get a foothold, like Westwood Baptist Church. They still come every year trying to recruit, and we try to keep students all through the Seacoast area calm when they come through sprouting hate. But New Hampshire really tried to get on board. And a number of Republicans from the Wolfboro area, Cliff, you'll remember at that time, they said enough is enough. And some of you may recall we had been working with this under Governor why do I have a brain cramp right now? Governor Judd Gregg. And when he was senator, I quietly went to him and I said, this is about your legacy, Senator Gregg. This is about the legacy of your family, of your kids and your grandkids who still live in the state. And I know you do not want to go down in history as the governor and leave this legacy with your family and as a U.S. senator that you did not support the holiday as the state began to move forward. You want to get on board. And he did. He actually wrote a letter in support of it after my conversations with him.
So you sort of went to him quietly and had this one-on-one conversation, and you feel like it made a big difference, Jackie.
It did. It did. And everything that we do, we leave, unquote, unquote, a paper trail, but we leave a legacy of hope. And I think everyone from the Lett family to Cliff's family, we want to, and our children, our nine grandchildren, we want to leave them that legacy that we have always fought for justice. And Judd Gregg wanted that legacy as well, even though there were some in the party that didn't. But we did have a bipartisan, and that's how it got through. Republicans got on board.
I love your thoughts too, Cliff. You were in the legislature at the time. Just having to bring people together around this and bring in some heavy hitters like Judd Gregg.
There were shifting opinions. It wasn't just that the composition of the legislature changed, it's that people's minds were changed over time.
Yeah.
And I had occasion to give a speech sort of three times, twice in the House and in the Senate, that was based on my father's eulogy of Martin Luther King in Vietnam at the time where he was a chaplain. And that, you know, helped move people, for instance.
Tell us a little bit more about that, Cliff. That was a big moment. So just backing up for listeners, your father was a chaplain during the Vietnam War. He was in Vietnam when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, and he gave this eulogy to the soldiers.
Right. He was what was called force chaplain for the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force, which was fighting in the northern quarter of Vietnam.
Wow.
He supervised about 100 chaplains in the field with the Marines. It was a year, 2 years, 67, 68, of the fiercest fighting, Battle of Wei, Quang Tri, Khe San. And a lot of the soldiers, and this is one of the criticisms at the time, who were dying were African-American who had been drafted. And that was part of the controversy from the previous year. So because Armed Forces Radio had an operation in Da Nang, his eulogy was broadcast throughout Vietnam.
Oh, my goodness.
To the armed forces.
What a story. Go ahead.
Picked up on the wire service. He was quoted in newspapers back in this country. And I'd like to share that if we have time for
that. If you could read, you know, a minute or two of that, Cliff, that would be great. Again, this is from the eulogy that your father gave that soldiers fighting in Vietnam listened to.
Right. And a little context. My mother grew up in the South, so she saw the racism. My father was actually a Southern Baptist minister. And here's what he wrote. This was April 1968, Da Nang, Vietnam. Martin Luther King, age 39, America's voice for the wisdom of nonviolence in the civil rights struggle, was killed by an unknown assailant last Thursday night in Memphis, Tennessee. Today, men of conscience around the world mourn his death. In a real sense, a part of every one of us dies whenever and wherever any other man dies who espouses the cause of freedom and dignity. So a part of us died with him. But there's a larger question. Martin Luther King believed that violence would only breed violence in return, and in the violence of racial strife, there would be no freedom or brotherhood for anyone. He was not the only man who has believed this. Jesus, 2,000 years ago, knew that if mankind ever achieved any sense of brotherhood, it would have to be done through love and not hate. He bet his life on that, and in one sense, he lost it because they crucified him. But in a larger sense, he won, because throughout the intervening centuries, there have been those who have seen in Jesus and his pattern of behavior and love the only redemptive answer for hatred and discord and strife in the world. Martin Luther King has been such a man. He died in that faith. The dream of Martin Luther King is still America's dream, not yet fully achieved. This we all acknowledge and confess. But the way in which we attack the problems before us, creatively or destructively, we shall nobly save or we shall meanly lose the last best hope on earth. Today, I will take my place beside the Martin Luther Kings, those who've walked the earth in love, in hope, in honor, and in dignity, and in the full flower of their humanness.
Cliff, that's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Still chokes me up.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to go to Sudi now, so you have a chance. Sudi, how do you hear that today, that beautiful eulogy that Cliff's father gave?
It's a great eulogy. I think a lot of the things that Martin Luther King stood for, and from what I heard from the eulogy, is just being able to stand on the right side of history, being able to stand for and fight for things that are for the greater good. And I believe a lot of the things that Martin Luther King stood for was about bringing humanity back to the United States.
Listening back to the speeches yesterday and diving into all the stuff that people said while this was going on, I was struck, Sudi, by the nonviolent part of King's message. Mm-hmm. And that seems to get less attention today. People talk about this as, you know, let's reflect on civil rights, let's mm-hmm. reflect on progress, let's reflect on, you know, work that still needs to be done. But the nonviolent aspect of this message seems not to get the attention that it perhaps deserves. And I wonder what you think, especially working with youth.
Well, I mean, with anything here in the country or in the world, you need participation. So I think Martin Luther King's position on having a nonviolent effort was rooted in not participating in the hate and the negativity and not trying to, quote unquote, fight fire with fire. So that's kind of what I take from that nonviolent approach. You're really trying to remove yourself from participating in situations that don't help.
It's hard. And especially today when there's sort of, you know, somebody tweets this and so you get mad and you tweet it back. You're mm-hmm. not looking at somebody face to face like you were 20 years ago.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it makes it for people who are, quote unquote, negative, it makes it a lot easier because you're able to kind of hide behind a screen or hide behind, you know, your words or any of those things. But as we go on, we'll find a way to clear those things up and communicate better.
Well, coming up, we're going to hear from U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. She, as we said, was governor when this bill was signed. And we'll start taking your reflections, questions, comments, thoughts about 20 years of a Martin Luther King Jr. Day here in New Hampshire. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's been 20 years since New Hampshire adopted Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a state holiday. We're hearing memories from that time. Here's former state representative Harvey Key, who marched with King and worked on establishing the holiday here in New Hampshire. In a 2008 interview with NPR, Key related the speech he gave at the State House on the day the King holiday bill was passed.
I was the last speaker on the House floor to tell my story about Birmingham, and I told them that what I was taught was not to look white people in the eye. Never look at a white girl at all, period, or you could be another Emmett Till. And the fact that my uncle, who helped raise me, was tied to a tree and beaten. I don't know what he really did, but whatever he did, I didn't think he deserved that. As it turned out, the bill passed the House that day by a huge margin. It was huge. It was one of the biggest days of my life.
Again, that's Harvey Key, former state lawmaker and civil rights activist, speaking on NPR about a decade ago. Joining us now is U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. As governor, she signed the King Holiday Bill into law in June of 1999. And Senator Shaheen, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Nice to be with you, Laura. I was very honored to be able to be the governor who signed the Martin Luther King Holiday into law.
Well, we were reflecting earlier with our guests, Cliff Belo, Sudi Lett, and Jackie Weatherspoon, about why it took New Hampshire so long. Again, we like to think of ourselves as first in the nation, but in this instance, we were last in the nation. Why do you think that's the case, Senator Shaheen?
I don't know, Laura. There was a lot of opposition from a lot of different places. For me, it was not only the right thing to do. I grew up and went to segregated schools as a kid. I had a window into what it was like before civil rights laws in this country. I taught in a newly integrated school in Mississippi. So I understood that it was not only important for New Hampshire, but it was an important message to send.
A message to send to attach this one person's name to the law, Senator Shaheen?
Well, it was important to everybody who was looking at equal opportunities and equal rights in this country. One of the things that I believe is that when we expand rights for one group, that it helps everybody to think about the opportunities that they have if we make sure that the law cover their interests as well. And for Martin Luther King, he had been such a face of the civil rights movement that it was important, I believe, to honor him.
Senator Shaheen, in recognition of New Hampshire's 20th anniversary, again, of this King Day holiday, you've put a statement into the Congressional Record, and I want to ask you about something you said in that statement. You said, Dr. King had a faith that engaged citizens are the most powerful promoters of positive social and economic change. How do you see citizen engagement today, Senator Shaheen, especially around those issues that King cared about, nonviolence, poverty, and racism?
I continue to believe that it is citizens, and certainly in the United States and our democracy, who will change things in this country. If they don't like what's happening, they will try, and if they're active, they can work to make things better. And I think we are seeing a whole new dynamic with social media in giving people both more power, but as you were saying earlier, also it affects how people interact. And so I think we've got to think about how we better improve engagement through social media. As you were saying earlier, people will say things on Twitter and on email that they would never say to someone's face. And so we need to help people think about how we best relate to others and how we be civil and respectful and listen to other points of view.
We also seem to be a pretty violent society today, Senator Shaheen. I'm struck by King's message of nonviolence and kind of shaking my head over lack of progress in that area. Am I being too negative there, Senator Shaheen? I just wonder how you think that nonviolent message is resonating today, if at all.
Well, certainly it's gotten caught up in the gun issue in the country. But again, I think if we look at the number of people who are active, who are concerned, that's the way we change things, is by getting citizens engaged in our debate, in our democracy, and how government runs. And So that's what I'm hoping we will see more of. That's what I try and encourage young people. That's why I think we need civics education in our schools so people understand not only how our government works, but how to get more engaged in what's happening.
What will you be doing on Monday, Senator Shaheen, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Well, I'm going to be doing a couple of events around the Martin Luther King holiday. I'm going to be at doing the day of service with City Year. I'm going to stop by there, and then I'm also going to be at an event to honor Dr. King.
Last thoughts that you want to leave us with, Senator Shaheen, about just kind of reflecting on where we're at with these goals established by the Martin Luther King Jr. Day, or the hopes?
I think what's important is for each of us to think about how in our own lives, in our own social networks, in our own, whether it's our workplace, at home with our children and our families, with our neighbors and our communities, how we can reflect the ideals that Dr. Martin Luther King encouraged us all to think about. How we can be, you know, one of my favorite lines from Dr. King is that everyone can be great because everyone can serve. We don't have to agree with our neighbors in order to be engaged in community service. You know, that's something we can do without necessarily agreeing on politics. So we can all get involved in ways that make a difference in people's lives. And for me, that's one of the greatest teachings from Dr. Martin Luther King.
Senator Shaheen, we know you're busy. We'll let you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
That's Jean Shaheen, New Hampshire's senior U.S. senator. And as she said when she was governor, she signed the bill establishing the state's Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. We're taking your reflections, questions, and comments this hour about 20 years since New Hampshire established its state Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jackie Weatherspoon, Sudhi Lett, Cliff Bilo, I'd like to sort of throw that question that I asked Senator Shaheen to you all. And Jackie, you first, please. So how are we doing? I mean, on these goals, these principles that this day is supposed to remind us of, nonviolence, working against poverty, eliminating racism. How are we doing, Jackie?
Well, I always, and I'm very thankful that I'm at the epicenter of a community that faces so many structural issues against them and challenges. So I have learned this year there are a number of good organizations that are working on issues of prison reform, issues of restorative justice, how to close certain prisons, to close private prisons, how do we keep our young people safe, how do we continue to give young people hope. And I just to reflect on Senator Jean Shaheen, and I totally supported her for so many years, because of her experience working in communities of color. When Jean brought kindergarten to New Hampshire, we were still at the bottom, and that brought such hope. So in communities where there are still so many stress factors, health care, a good education, restorative justice, prison reform, education is so important. So a lot of people that I work with, that I meet, I'm encouraged because they are working on those issues. I meet so many teachers who are trying. In some ways, it's very difficult for them, but they are trying. Some of them may not stay in the profession because they come from situations themselves where they didn't experience school the way we are now. Look at the epidemic of meth that we've had, and Jean has worked on that issue. She's brought money to our state. But that breaks up families. Families in the state of New Hampshire, which would have mainly been traditional families that have been whole, but it's even impacted traditional families. So I look at this time where we're not condemning people. We're looking at those structural issues like the drug manufacturers, like the pharmaceutical industry to right those wrongs.
So you see people working for change on these. You do see people working for change on these various aspects, prison reform, you know, drug addiction and so forth. I wonder, Sudhi, you work with young people. You know, you are a youth organizer and a basketball coach. So lots of teenagers. So how do they reflect on, either the Martin Luther King Day itself or just some of these goals that the day establishes and you know, tries to get people to focus on?
Well, our students are really far removed from MLK. The most recent, like, major event in our country is 9/11, and they were, like, babies when that happened. So, I mean, for me, it feels like yesterday. I'm much further removed from MLK than you would expect. But for the youth, my main goal is to try to teach them that because they're coming with new technology, a new way of life, they're living a completely different way than my parents did, that they don't have to keep things the same way. They can choose to live a completely different way. And what I mean by that is, you brought up, like, where are we at with nonviolence and eliminating poverty and racism? Well, if the goal is to eliminate those things, then, you know, we haven't yet. And what I try to do is try to change the way that the students think in terms of the only race on earth is the human race. Like, that's the only race that's on earth. So if we can start there and say that, yes, we are different and we all have different ways we talk and different music we like or different things we like, but what are the things that we can all agree on? And once we can find some commonalities, then we can start working together on those common issues. For our students, they come from a diverse, various backgrounds, and their common issue was student voice. They all wanted a voice. Some of our students in our youth group are Dems, some are Republicans, and we know the battle that could be, but they found a common issue, which was student voice. And so they were able to band together and work on that issue and fight together and support each other.
Like getting a voice on the school board?
Yes. We had a ballot initiative to have a question about getting a student on the school board in Manchester. It was very successful. It passed with a yes vote of 74%. And that overwhelming victory was due to different people finding a common cause and working together.
I want to ask you, too, Cliff, about those sort of broad goals that MLK Day is said to remind us of. But before I let you jump in on that, I want to play a little bit from, again, that signing day, June 1999. And Martin Luther King III came to New Hampshire for that signing ceremony. He celebrated the fact that as a new century dawned, and there was a lot of talk that day about a new century. It's kind of fun to listen to. He said as a new century was dawning, he said it was great that 50 states would be observing the day. And he said that he hoped the new holiday would serve as a reminder to carry forward the civil rights movement's unfinished work. So let's hear a little bit from Martin Luther King III.
My father never sought recognition for himself, but I think he'd be very pleased that this holiday is becoming a nationwide celebration of nonviolence and humanitarian service. And so our challenge for the King holiday in the new century is to build on this trend and make it a day of doing for others in every family, every organization, and institution across the nation, and set an example to inspire year-round involvement in community service and working for social justice.
Again, that's Martin Luther King III in New Hampshire in June of 1999, celebrating the fact that New Hampshire had created a Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a state holiday. Cliff Below, we heard Senator Shaheen talk about this. Jackie talked about it. Sudie talked about it. Martin Luther King Day as a day of community service. How widespread is that, though, Cliff? What do you see?
Well, I think there is. New Hampshire's always had a strong tradition of volunteer service and community engagement, and I think we're seeing a revival of that. And part of that is wanting to express that recognition of the dignity and humanness of everyone. And it comes up in the immigration issue, wanting to be welcoming communities. We've made tremendous progress in some areas, like LGBT rights and recognition. You know, we've had an African-American president, and we have a gay man who's a serious candidate for president. Those things were unimaginable 20 or 30 years ago. But, you know, it's an ongoing process of work.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Jim is calling in from Goffstown. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Thank you for being with us. Jim,
Hello?
Good morning. You're on the air. Yep, we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Great. Thank you. So wanted to first, representing the Manchester NAACP, express our thanks for the work that the guests have done in making this day a reality, and everyone around the state who made this day a reality. And just want to also amplify a couple of things that have been said and just pose a question then to the group. Just listening to Sudi and hi, Sudi, just talking about coming together to do the right thing and finding common cause. That's so critical, I think, especially in the time in which we live. So want to encourage people to think about that. And this concept of doing for others that Dr. King brought about, I really want to encourage us all to take that in heart. And I wonder if folks would just share some of their thoughts about what kinds of things people could do to live into that doing for others. And from a civic perspective, you know, getting out and voting, whatever your beliefs are, and for whomever you want to vote for, but making sure you participate in the process. Just what are some of the other examples that you all would love to see people do to live into that dream that Dr. King has?
James, thank you for calling. And I'm guessing this is James McKim, the new head of the NAACP in Manchester. So I really appreciate that call. Jackie, do you want to jump in first real quick on what he said?
Yeah. As you all know, I work with students constantly as well. And I am the faculty advisor to the Democratic Club in Exeter, in fact, Republican students. So I teach them to volunteer on a campaign of their choice. I teach them how to do phone banking. I teach them how to canvass. And I teach them that if they do not participate, they lose their voices in a society that is a democracy. And a democracy needs their voices. So I always work with young people, always. And it's a joy. And they come up with new ways of communicating, newest technology. So I'm for students participating all the time, whether it's New Hampshire, New York. I traveled around the country for different candidates. So I'm for just getting more and more students involved in every single school in New Hampshire.
Well, and again, the King Day offers you and others that opportunity to kind of check back in with some of those ideals. We will talk more after a short break, and we'll hear more audio from people who worked on getting New Hampshire's King Day established. We'll keep taking your calls and emails, too. So, James, thank you for that one. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also comment on Facebook. You can tweet us, and we'll be back in a minute. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, we're looking back 20 years since New Hampshire became the last state to approve a Martin Luther King holiday. We've been hearing voices from that time. Here's another one, longtime activist Arnie Alpert, speaking on June 7th when the King Bill was signed.
When he won the Nobel Prize, he did not retire from the struggle. When the Civil Rights Act was passed, he was not deluded into thinking that racism had been vanquished. When the Voting Rights Act was passed, he did not fool himself that the promise of democracy had been realized for everyone. And this is why Dr. King's holiday is needed and why it is about more than civil rights. Martin Luther King Jr. was a civil rights leader, of course, but he was always more than that. He was our prophet of interracial brotherhood and sisterhood, our prophet of economic justice, our prophet of nonviolence.
Again, longtime activist Arnie Alpert. On June 7, 1999, he was deeply involved in the Martin Luther King Day Committee. You can join us with your thoughts, reflections, questions. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email, all of you, from Donna from East Andover, who says she took her daughters out of school on Martin Luther King Day before it became Martin Luther King Day in New Hampshire. Here's Donna. She says, I volunteered for the MLK Coalition in New Hampshire to get the holiday passed. I remember that every year before its passing, our two daughters, then in elementary school, would miss school in order to attend the events held in Manchester. And every year I would meet with our local school board to ask that they consider it a holiday. Our daughters would have had perfect attendance if it wasn't for me taking them out of school each year for the holiday. I was told after one of these meetings with the school board that after I left the public section of the meeting and the board was in private discussions, that one of the board members commented that I was, after all, a communist. Wow, Donna. MLK, she says, was ridiculed for meeting with Castro and for his anti-war stand. Donna, thank you for that story. And Cliff, you reminded us of that before. Go ahead, just reflect on that, you know. A lot of people at the time especially didn't like Martin Luther King's nonviolent message, anti-war message.
Right. I mean, I think there was still the residual racism that we're seeing percolate up today to some extent. But there was also an effort to say that this kind of social movement is some fundamentally subversive, where the other voices that rose was, no, this is fundamentally American. This is the best of our traditions. I think we're still struggling with that. Today, what that means.
Give us a little bit more on that. I'd love your you look like you want to say more.
Well, how do we bring people together and bridge these divisions that are partially, you know, we're learning that Russia is still trying to interfere with our elections and create division through these new social medias. So we have a huge challenge in understanding that. Yet we're also seeing a rise in young people with climate activism, for instance. And that's an existential threat, I believe. And so if people want to find ways to get involved, get involved. That's one that has big social justice implications. Arguably, a lot of the immigration problem that we have at our southern border is a result of climate change in Central America, driven by global warming. So making these connections is an important understanding to the challenges that we want to work to overcome to achieve our ideals.
So do the young people that you work with, how do they observe this day? We've heard from others saying they're going to be at this service, they're going to be at that event, they're going to do some community service, including Senator Shaheen. Do the young people you work with say, great, I have a long weekend in the middle of January? Or do they, you know, get out and, I don't know, build houses for Habitat for Humanity or something?
Well, we have some of the most active youth in the state. They're really active in their community. Most of the youth in our organization, Young Organizers United, are going to be having speeches on different panels. After we leave this event, later in the day, one of our students is going to be sitting on a panel. Tomorrow, another one of our students is going to give a MLK address to the entire student population at Manchester Central High School. On Monday, another one of our students is going to address another.
Wow, you're busy.
So our students, I mean, they're in it to win it. You know, they are in service. But one of the ways I think that we can bring people together, it's going to sound kind of silly, but it's food. I mean, you can't eat on the internet. You can only eat in person. And only way we're going to really be able to come together and break some of these barriers down is by meeting and talking one-on-one in person, being able to hear someone out, being able to hear context, tone, facial expressions, all of those things that you can't get online. And also being able to have the courage to speak face-to-face to someone. You may have a position that may not be favorable to everyone, but the courage to be able to stand on your position, to be able to speak it, to be able to speak truth to power, those are the things that, you know, we need for our youth and kind of for everybody.
It's hard today because, I mean, it's always been hard, but if you say something that kind of goes against the grain, sometimes you get, you know, really threatened by trolls on social media and so forth. Some young people I talk to feel like they have less free speech, even though they have so many ways of communicating, but they have less free speech because they are shouted down, threatened, frightened, criticized, hounded, whatever. I wonder what you think, Sudi.
Well, most of the change that's come in this country comes with many obstacles on the way to making change. As we talked about with MLK before, we celebrate him now. He's a national hero now, but he was vilified on his way up.
As Donna told us, yeah.
He was vilified on his way up. He had the government surveillance on him. I mean, so I talk to the students about being able to stay true to what's in your heart. And when you're fighting for what's right, eventually, it may not happen, you know, in 10 seconds like everything does on the internet, but eventually people will come around and be able to see who you are as a person. I think that's the critical example of Dr. King, to be able to be vilified fighting for poor people, to be vilified fighting for people of color, to be vilified for those things, but to not give up, but to not give up hope, but to try to keep your family protected, keep your family strong and vigilant, so that one day we can sit here and in HPR and have a conversation about how great this man was. So,
well, and you're reminding us that it's never been easy.
No, and it won't be easy.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Gi Jun Lun is calling from Plymouth. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thank you for being with us.
My name is Gisela.
Gisela. Okay.
I'm from Plymouth. And several people of our Star King Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Plymouth participated in a demonstration in favor of Martin Luther King Day in Concord. After the demonstration, we met at the Concord Unitarian Universalist Church. There were two students from New Hampshire speaking, standing next to each other, a white student and a black student. I remembered from Dr. King's speech that one of his dreams was for black and white children to be together. And I became very emotional and teary, and still am when I think about it now. And also from that demonstration, I have a beautiful poster with the quote, "Let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire." And I'm just very proud that we did all that. But the problem is we still have a lot more work to do in New Hampshire.
Well, Gisela, thank you very much for calling in. It's good to hear from you. And by the way, in some of the audio from the signing day, people were ringing bells and chimes,
yes,
because of King's reference,
yes,
to,
yes,
that. Jackie, do you want to jump in there on some of the points that Gisela made, please?
Well, I think, again, the idea with children, with a lot of movements, even with the civil rights movement, children played a very important part. Children are fearless. It's kind of hard to arrest kids, you know, for trying to bring issues to the forefront within important communities. But I know within the black community, children were always there. And that's why kids know what's right. Kids know that black and white, rainbow, LGBTQ, everyone is wonderful in God's sight. And kids get this sooner than adults. And that's why it's always a pleasure working with students. But giving more students an opportunity to be heard, to find out where their pain is. And I think that's where violence takes the place of being heard. And I think if we listen to each other, especially as kids, kids come up with great solutions. So I'm all for the kids. I'm all for giving a lot of adults stepping out of the way and letting kids lead the way, because they are the future. They're going to inhabit this world, and let's not leave them a mess. Let's help them move it forward.
Go ahead, Sudhi.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of piggyback off Jackie's point. One of the things that goes missing in Dr. King's fight is that he learned about how the government works. He was able to get several things signed into law, and for our students, we're doing a huge civic engagement push so that the students understand how our local government works and how the larger government works as well, so that they can understand how to use their voice in order to kind of attain the power that they need to make change. So I just don't want that part to get lost, is that, you know, Dr. King, you know, he marched, he gave sermons, he spoke, but he also learned about how systems work and how to affect change through changing systems.
Well, and that's a perfect platform for me to tout NHPR Civics 101 podcast. I hope anyone who works with kids and cares about civics education picks up on that. Civics 101, the team does a great job just explaining some of the fundamentals that you mentioned, Sudhi. Cliff, did you want to jump in too?
Well, for quite a while, I sort of focused on state and national issues in my work. Now I'm working at pretty much the local level, the city of Lebanon. And I'm finding that very satisfying because a lot of the issues that we're concerned about nationally really are reflected at the local level. And so that's where I encourage people to get involved with their local government because people can make a difference there. And that's the foundation for making a difference at the state level and the national level as well.
Jackie, do you have any personal remembrances of seeing Dr. King speak on TV or maybe in person, I'm not sure, of that time when he was alive and active? Do you have any memories of that?
Well, my family, they were involved for many years in issues of police brutality. And they were, my relatives, they're in their 80s now, they were part of organizing the march on Washington via Harlem, getting people on buses, what that was like, with some of the heavy hitters here, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. So I just remember Black people in Harlem saying this is so important because a lot of those issues early on for Black people were about Black people. And even though our Jewish brothers, our Greek brothers, our Italian brothers were all there, our Black community knew how important it was for our future. And they were willing to go to jail. My uncle went to jail for issues of free speech, and it led the way for me. So to have my family involved with the organizing of the March on Washington always gave me more courage to just to keep going and to get involved. And that's why I'm so thankful for being able to work in the legislature, work hand in hand with so many folks like, and I have to mention them, Peter Burling, like a Ray Buckley, like a Martha Fuller Clark, like so many others who they wanted to get on board, and they did. And so I'm just so thankful for the years. It was only six, but the 6 years that I was in the legislature was absolutely phenomenal. And my family from Harlem, they led the way and showed me the way. They would get me on radio and I'd have to explain what was going on in New Hampshire. They were with me all the way through this work.
How do the middle school children, Jackie, that you work with right now in Harlem, and as I said earlier, you divide your time between Harlem and your duties here in the Granite State, how do they view this history when you talk about it? Does it feel like, you know, something ancient from, you know, the Revolutionary War or something? Or does it feel relevant to their lives today?
It does, because our kids are dealing with issues of DACA. They're dealing with issues of immigration. And when you put the two together, some of them are questioning each other. Do my parents have a green card? Will they be picked up? They talk about what happens outside of a 7-Eleven. They're learning about modern slavery, human trafficking. So our kids, because they are at the epicenter of what America doesn't want to be, but it could be, they are fearless. They will look you in the face and they will say, look, I'm going to keep on going. I'm going to keep on striving. So it's been so refreshing that these kids are fearless, but their challenge is they don't have some of the tools to make change fast enough. And that's why I think for me at this time, it's such a gift to be at a school, you know, temporarily at a school like the Harlem Children's Zone.
That's really interesting. They don't have the tools to make change. Now, on one hand, you could say they've got all the tools they want. They've got everybody has a phone in their pocket and everybody can broadcast their message, whatever that message may be.
Tools, yeah. When I say tools, government.
I see.
Structural change.
That has to do with what?
Housing.
Yeah.
Housing. Homelessness. Affordable housing. Climate change. Affordable transportation. So those are the tools I'm talking about.
That's really interesting. Okay, I'm glad you clarified that. So that's like the basic tools. You can't go out and make change if you're hungry, don't have a place to live, have drug-addicted parents, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's a really good point, Jackie.
Yep.
And, Sudhi, I'd love to hear from you, too, on how, you know, the kids that you work with, you're working with teenagers, high schoolers, do they view, when you talk about this, as ancient history, or does it seem sort of right here, right now? It was really compelling to hear what Jackie said about middle schoolers.
I think for our students, it isn't ancient history. It definitely is history. And I think my role, and I think Jackie would back me up on this, our role is to be able to find ways to relate those experiences to today's experiences. Unfortunately, there's a lot of negative experiences today that we can relate to the negative experiences that Martin Luther King went through. So that's unfortunate. However, what we like to try to impose upon the kids is the values that Dr. King lived with and the courage that he had and the discipline he had to be able to continue to go forward during some of the roughest times, I mean, in human history. And so what I like to do with our students is to give them an idea of what their day's like and then to give them an idea of what their day would have been like in 1960. And then from there, they can kind of be able to appreciate what they have now, see the tools that they have now that they can use now while still aspiring and espousing to get more and learn more.
All right, well, and we're going to close out with some music from that signing ceremony on June 7th, 1999. And Cliff Below, it was so moving to hear you talk about that eulogy your father gave. I'm hoping we can put that on our website so people can read the whole thing because it was really beautiful. I want to thank everybody for being with us today. Jackie Weatherspoon, Sudi Lett, Cliff Below, really good to have you all. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.